lights out, we're underway. Motorsport Republic of Podcast.
Mark Bandanaman Danby, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, James. Yeah, big fellas away.
Big fellas away.
Big seat to fill.
Big seat to fill. You're going to have to be funny, joyful.
I'm just getting over the flu very badly, mate. So there'll be a lot of coughing and spluttering tonight. So just excuse me there, please.
We've got no time and we've got a 50% Danby.
I'll try.
Mate, we need you up and about. We need you up and about. Guys, no T Shavs for a couple of weeks. We've got Danby filling in this week and a special guest for next week. So you're going to listen to us ramble on about the Miami Grand Prix, and we'll preview Le Mans. So Le Mans going to be a big one. And we haven't spoken about MotoGP either. So we've got a bit to talk about us too.
Yeah, we haven't since Thailand, we haven't seen each other pretty much.
Just about, yeah. So it's going to be a good episode, a good catch-up episode with you as well. So it's going to be a... It's going to be fun, man. And I think we're going to head and speak to Tom on the phone.
That'll
as well,
be fun.
Which will be hilarious. Get him on the phone.
Get the blower.
Get him on the blower. For everyone.
So he's been sliced up in a sushi. It's a sushi, yeah.
He's been hacked over there.
I'm not surprised.
He's been hacked. All his accounts, our Republic account, everything got hacked. So it's a pain in the ass. But other than that, he's been smashing some sushis and probably drinking a ton of beer and doing all that stuff. I kind of left him alone and let him enjoy himself. Told him to go to the Honda Museum or something over there.
I'm going to try. Why not?
Well, have you been there?
No, I haven't been to that one. No.
Go on. What else have you been to there?
So I went to two Suzukas.
They've got a big motorsport museum there, don't they?
Yeah, they've got one there as well. But the first time I went, it was raining all weekend, so we didn't really get out much.
Yeah.
And then recently, I went 2 years ago. We stayed in Nagoya.
Yeah.
Just made the track every day, back to the track. It's been a bit of time in Tokyo, though. It's all about just sussing out Tokyo.
Yeah, gotcha.
It's just a crazy city, and the efficiency, the Japanese efficiency.
Yeah, they're amazing.
It's just pretty crazy.
They're amazing. Lackluster in the motorsport field at the moment, but that's all right. We'll dive into that. Everyone listening, thank you for everyone subscribing onto our Patreon. So we do our monthly episode, Danby, on our Patreon, Tom and I doing a recap of that month's racing. We just did April. April is out. I'm just trying to think if it's the right month. Yeah, April is out. So to all our subscribers and all our listeners, we really appreciate it. Also, jump onto our YouTube, like and subscribe. All that stuff helps. It's really, really cool. And obviously, this episode wouldn't be possible as well without the help of Adrian and motoheaven.com.au. Check out those guys
down there.
All the boys down there. They're doing an amazing job. They can get all your helmets, jackets, and accessories and parts that you click and collect. They ship all around the country, and you can literally just get like anything. They got everything there. It's wild. So awesome guys. Awesome guys to deal with. You know them a bit now, so it's good. Yeah.
So the results, James?
Mates, sprint
Miami
race.
Grand Prix, yeah.
Miami Grand Prix. All right, I'll do 1-10 for you, sprint race, and 1-10 in the main race. All right, first sprint race, Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri second, Lewis Hamilton third, George Russell fourth, Lance Stroll fifth, Yuki Tsunoda sixth, Kimi Antonelli seventh.
Sorry, who was that in sixth?
Yuki Tsunoda sixth.
Sorry, just checking.
Kimi Antonelli seventh, Pierre Gasly eighth, Nico Hülkenberg ninth, and Isaac Hadjar in 10th. I know you've been waiting all day to say haven't you?
I just forgot about the sprint race totally.
First, Miami Grand Prix Sunday race. Oscar Piastri first.
Another win for the Aussie.
That's unbelievable.
On a roll.
Lando Norris second. George Russell third. Max Verstappen fourth. Alex Albon fifth. Kimi Antonelli sixth. Charles Leclerc seventh. Eighth, the controversial Lewis Hamilton. Ninth, Carlos Sainz and Yuki Tsunoda behind both Williams, disappointingly 10th.
So he still got 10th for that penalty because I know
he had a 5 second penalty.
And close it down, okay.
What do you think of the main race? Let's talk about that. That's the most important thing.
You know, once again, we turn the TV on and they talk, oh, there could be rain. I'm just over this one-stop stuff, James.
Yeah.
And it did look like in the distance the rain was coming.
Yeah. Well, a couple of teams even said it, I think.
Russell called it at one point. It started to rain and it needed it. Backing off, following from what happened in the sprint, because the sprint was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
It was started off wet and then became dry and all the different strategies with swapping to the dry tyres. But yeah, I suppose, you know, once again, turn one, little bit of I wouldn't call it controversy, but yeah, there was Max and Lando going at it.
Is it just hard racing?
Of course, it's hard racing. Yeah. But you know, here's Lando, should have got the pole, yeah. Stuffed up the last corner.
Yeah.
He's in the front row, and Oscar's fourth, and somehow within five laps he's leading the race.
Crazy.
So again, just got to look at how, you know, Lando's just giving away too much at the moment. You know, and I think with all of them, this is Oscar included, they're all trying to put one over Max. They seem to want to get that scalp, or they want to take him on at turn one and come out the other side and say, I've done it. And to me this morning, given how fast that McLaren ended up being, or probably was all weekend,
yeah.
Again, they stuffed up the pole. Yeah. They've done in Suzuka and Jeddah as well. You know, you just don't, easy to say, they're racers, but don't get involved with Max in turn one. You know, you're not going to, when it's 50-50, 60-40, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
You're going to lose. And I'm saying Lando, for what he went for, got literally turning up, dropping back five places.
It's a weird one though, because we always talk about to race to turn one. So we do say that. So you can understand why he would think that. And I'm never normally a defender of Lando.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan.
But if you've got that much of a superior car,
exactly,
and you know, you could even make this argument for Marc Marquez and Jerez last weekend. You know, you just got to be a bit more patient. And if he was a bit more patient, he's ahead of Oscar. So if anything does happen anyway, he's got, like, he can pit first, he can do everything first.
That's what he gave up ultimately. That's what he gave away in the end. Like, not only did he lose out to Max, but he comes out of the first three, four corners and he's three cars behind Oscar.
Yeah.
So you think, well, here we go again. Oscar's going to get the priority with the pit stops and everything else. And then before he knew it, Oscar got around Max, took Lando a bit longer because Max would have adjusted to where the McLaren strengths were. But we blinked and Oscar was 9 seconds up the road.
Blinked.
That was literally, I went, what the hell? Yeah. It was 4 seconds.
It was it felt like 4 seconds and five laps, not even. It was incredible. Yeah,
but then next minute, I went, what? 8.9, 8.8.
And it was a good move. Like, it was a good, hard, fair move by Oscar on Max, and pushed him out and then just cut him back on the inside and he was never getting passed again, you know. So where, you know, Lando had some hard moves, had to give the place back, which was actually really smart. He gave it back straight away. He didn't fluff around of all that. But it's still, you're right, Max would have adjusted. He would have known. But it just shows how, it just shows as well with Oscar how much of a killer he is, and just so smooth and calm under pressure. And, you know, I was talking to Adrian from Motor Heaven about this today, funny enough, and it'll be interesting to see how he goes in 5-6 years when there's, you would almost say there's sometimes more pressure, because you might be a bit more jaded from the sport. You might think, I should have priority. You know, when you're early and you're young, it's you're not naive, but you just kind of roll with the punches. Where you look at Max now, he fights everything. Was he like that in the early stages?
He's always been like that. Junior career, all the way through. That's how he made his name for himself, and that's why he came into F1 with that. I've said this before in here, that he came into F1 with a bit of a bad reputation, for the simple fact that he was just, you're not passing me. He'd cut people off. He'd do the double moves. They actually created a new rule because of him.
So you know you're good when they create rules.
But at the end of the day, they allowed that in the junior formulas.
So it wasn't his fault. It's in the rules.
That's right. He was just racing according to what the rules were at the time. So, and look, that's how he is. Max, he's not giving up an inch. And, you know, Lando came out today and said, oh, you know, well, he didn't drive very smart today at turn one because he cost himself a podium. You know, well, that's probably half true, but it's not the point. It's turn one.
Yeah.
He's on pole position. When you're on pole, you're not giving it up without a real massive fight, are you?
Well, you see that with all the killers. We talk about this. It might be the biggest thing Tom and I talk about is you see these multiple time world champions. They don't just give it up. It doesn't happen.
There's none of that.
Like, it's
and
just.
If there is, you get laughed out of the sport.
Correct.
You know, you just get set upon.
You'll never be that Max Verstappen or Valentino or Marc Marquez or Michael Schumacher, whoever it is. Like, it's just, there's such a common denominator with that, where they will just do anything to keep that first place. And Formula One, it's a race to the first corner, let's be honest. To a degree.
Yeah, look, we've seen that all year. We saw in the sprint, Oscar got the better jump on Kimi, pushed him out wide, was in the rules.
Yeah.
So these last three, four races, we've consistently seen, they've just, whoever's been on the inside has gone up the inside, up trying to take the lead, you know, straight away.
You know what they needed? And look, I don't know. It's hard to tell from a distance, obviously, a very far, far long way. But, like, they're straight onto the radio. Like, just straight onto the radio. And it's just like, maybe that's what you got to do, or is it? Do you just crack on?
Yeah, eyes are sook. It's all about hearing. Oh, Lewis is a sook, and this guy's a sook. I mean, you know, they've got to have an outlet somewhere, you know. Mm. And they're all going to feel like they're hard done by.
Yeah.
And you heard Max today. Did George slow into the yellow? You know, he's already watching. He's watching somebody else's race. For someone who hates the rules and the rule makers, he knows the rules.
Yeah. So here
he is. I'm against these rules, but he knows them inside out. So, you know, it sounds like they're all dobbing each other into like a bunch of crybabies, but they've got that outlet, and that more than anything, that they want the FIA to know that they're trying to convince the FIA or the powers that be, the race control, I've been dudded here. Are you going to agree with me? Mm. Sort of thing. And that's why I think both instances. You know, play on. There was no, you know, I heard Brundle say today it's different again when there's a series of three or four corners with regards to the apex. And I'm like, this is just too much. Like, it gave me a headache when I heard that. Like, what do you mean if it's the inside becomes the outside become, you know? But from what I saw, at no point was Lando in front or alongside enough to hold the line for the next corner. And the fact that he had to jump out of it and lose that many positions, it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
It just wasn't. Because as you said, he's next to me behind. He's behind Oscar. He's lost all his advantage that he built up over qualifying. He was a whole row in front of him, a couple of tenths, or tenths and a bit. It was pretty close to quality.
Mm.
And just like that, you know.
Mm. Yeah, it's fascinating. And then obviously, as like Tom talks about all the time, you're at the peak of these cars. So they're just getting everything out of them. So it's going to be interesting coming into next year and how that's going to change as well. So Tommy, anyway, I've been looking at getting a new helmet.
Okay, right, you are
a replica helmet.
Okay,
so I'm looking at either like a Marc Marquez, Shoei, Rossi AGV, or controversially like a Nakagami Arai. What do you think?
Well, I think Nakagami Arai might be a bad idea because they'd have to build them strong. You know, repeat hits throughout the whole weekend.
Where would you find
something like that?
Mate, motoheaven.com.au. They have all the helmet brands that you want. They've got all the racing suits, jackets, big brands, HJC, Shoei, Dainese, Alps. Mate, they have everything. How good's that?
That is so good. And I heard like there's free delivery over $150 as well.
Free delivery over $150. Super, super fast dispatch, which is amazing all around the country. They do an excellent job. You just check out their Google reviews. It's like all five stars. It's pretty amazing. They do a great job.
Give the people the website.
Motoheaven.com.au. Check them out. They are the best in the business for all your motorcycle needs. And they've got a parts finder. You can get all the parts you want. Brake discs, chains, sprockets, spark plugs. I know that's all gobbledygook to you, Tom. But that is the they are the best in the business. Head down to motoheaven.com.au and they will look after you. Let's see if I can get Big Fell on the blower because he keeps messaging me. He's dying to get on. He's dying. For all our listeners, it's all he's answers straight away.
Yes.
Hey, you're live on the podcast, mate.
Beautiful. Have you got a word in with Danby yet?
Danby's sick. He's only 50%.
What?
Yeah, I'm actually trying to get a word out of him.
I've never heard such a thing.
Happens.
See, I'm telling you.
I thought it'd be so much pseudoephedrine in his system, he could never get sick.
That's Japan.
It's pretty amazing, man. It's a different world over here, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's for James Shaw.
That's very James Shaw.
It's like a movie set everywhere you go. It's incredible. So,
good looking chicks.
They're not into the Westerners though.
You bombed out, Tom.
Yeah, they like the little shy Japanese men. So.
The little businessmen. Okay. The little businessmen.
The salary men.
Give us your top 3 points in Miami. What's going on? What do you think?
Well, interesting. I from what I took from it was Piastri's got the racecraft, and I didn't expect that from him this early in the season. I think Lando took so long to get past Verstappen as well, which is interesting. And I think even they hinted at on the commentary, Brando was saying, you know, it's like, why isn't Lando putting any pressure on Verstappen in the last corner, getting him off his line? So that was a big thing for me. I mean, obviously Hamilton with his comments that Danby's been talking about all day.
Yeah, we haven't even touched on that yet.
It's imploding there at the Ferrari, which I've spoken about.
Mate, stop putting that soy sauce in your hair. Lay off the soy sauce, Tom.
Soy sauce. It's going to happen. It's imploding, and we all can see it. He's had a couple of good results, but yeah, that Ferrari is just a big struggle.
Last point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the last point.
Give us something.
Is Miami is going to be on the calendar till 2040?
Yeah, I saw that.
When I saw spare seats in the crowd already, 3-4 years in, however long it is. So,
is it because it's so expensive?
I went to that one.
It's one of the most expensive Grand Prix, isn't it? Danby's not in his head.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, Danby, have you been there before,
Mark? Yeah, I went 2 years ago. I went to the one there 2 years ago.
So yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, the racing was a lot better than what I thought it was. But Max is just outstanding. I mean, could you imagine having all three of us couldn't imagine it, but imagine having, we don't know about Danby, but imagine having a kid and then racing the next day. Practicing the next day, you couldn't imagine that, you know. So for him to come out and to put the results that he did all weekend is pretty incredible as well.
It is good. It's amazing. One last thing, preview for Le Mans. What's going on?
Le Mans, I think that it's just going to be another Marquez show, isn't it? We'll see if he can stay on the bike. It's just him against his head at the moment. So, he's on his favourite track, I'm going to say. So, that's going to be interesting. And I'm happy that it's a good time because I'll be able to find a little Japanese bar somewhere to watch it at, because it was a bit hard at 5 a.m. in the morning this morning.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Trying to find somewhere to watch it. So, nah. All the bars. I mean, there's some bars that are open late, but they're
in 5 a.m. Tokyo, they'll all be on their commute to work for their 20-hour work day.
Bro, you don't understand what it's like here. Like, Mel and I have seen that many, like, blokes in their suits just spewing on the side of the street.
Oh, yeah, they love it, don't they?
They just love it.
Like, it's a term for that. There's a term for that.
Yeah. We're walking home today and 11 o'clock this morning. Like, we went out, we went to the shops, came back to the hotel, and there's a guy on the side of the road just spewing his guts out. We're like, what the fuck is going on? Like, it's just such a... Like, they just love their booze. And I think it's like it must be a peer pressure thing or something where they just can't stop. They just can't stop. You don't see that in the streets of Melbourne. Like, I think as everyone's... Because everyone's on the coke or whatever. It's a bit
Curdy wants so to talk. Curdy?
It's the same thing as South Korea. They have a whole bar in their basement at home. And it's once the beer's open, they drink all of it. Yeah, they don't stop until they're gone.
Curtis, let me know if you want me to bring any hentai material.
Any furries over there or what?
Oh, there's lots of weirdos, man. Lots of weirdos. And Mel and I were actually like having a point with this today. We're like, there's 28 million people live in this city, and you have to stand out. And that's why there's so many weird and wonderful wacky shit that they do.
Well, they've always been pretty out there.
They want to like break out from the pack, so it's a bit, you know,
the wolf pack.
So,
the wolf pack.
Did I show you, James? I was talking about, I found a Nidamitsu service station.
Oh, just yeah. One. Yeah.
Just one. So I think money laundering. I only found one.
And so the sport washing. It's apparently the biggest Asian oil company.
Yeah, haven't just seen one Nidamitsu, that's about it.
So. Actually, that can be your job for the rest of the trip. Keep your eye out for Nidamitsu. Keep an eye out for Chantra and Nakagami.
I said I'm going to try to find another one. I haven't found another one. So.
It's actually messed up. All right, I like it. Yeah. Good man. Thanks for that.
He's getting me off. Play
the music. Tom's got the biggest FOMO right now. Just say yeah.
I'm disappointing Danby's, he should be. This is his time to shine, so I'm surprised that he's, hasn't come to the party, but that's okay.
I'll move him on and stick the phone in the microphone.
Yeah, that's it. Nah, I miss you, boys. Looking forward to coming back. I'll see you in a couple of weeks, so.
All right, mate. I'm going to call you. I'll call you for the next pod anyway.
Yeah, sounds good.
Right, see you, Tom. See you, mate. Enjoy. Bye.
See you, mate. Excited boy.
He's an excited boy, mate. He's true about the Inamitsu thing, though. What the fuck? What's going on there? What else are you taking about? What's going on Ferrari? Let's talk about that.
Look, Tom's getting carried away with this whole Hamilton imploding.
He wasn't happy, man. He was not happy the whole race.
Yeah, but look, let's go back. First of all, I heard him last week, imploding. Look, when you talk about imploding, that was Sebastian Vettel in 2017-18. That's imploding. Okay, when the championship's in your lap and you throw it away with silly decisions, and same on the pit wall. I mean, all we're seeing here is a guy that's getting paid squillions of dollars expecting professionalism. Okay, so, all his radio chat today, I mean, he's just saying it how it is. How is it? So he can qualify better. We get he's struggling, but you've put him on an alternative strategy, knowing full well that's the better tyre to be on in the back half of the race. So once he catches up to his teammate, you can make a fair assumption, they're going to let me pass him. So the fact that he's stuck there for three laps and has to get on the blower and say, what am I doing? And first it's like, well, we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. Ferrari, they can't handle two drivers. And as for that French bloke, he's been off making croissants. That Freddy Vasseur, he is fucking useless. He is fucking useless, okay?
Yeah.
Sits on the pit wall and just looks side to side.
Shrugging his shoulders. Mate,
what is that?
But then he didn't take off from Leclerc.
We get all that. And then they look silly because they swap them back later on. Yeah. But have the plan. We've seen this with the pleb teams, Let him pass. If he can pass him, no worries. If he can't, we'll let you back.
Yeah, I've seen McLaren do that a few times.
But things like, they told Hamilton that he's going to get let through, but they haven't told Charles yet. Like, that miscommunication.
Yeah, it could be 100%. You're right.
It's fucking ridiculous.
But that's a Ferrari. It's definitely a Ferrari thing as a whole. Like, this is a major problem.
Now, if you talk about Hamilton, sure. If Leclerc's winning races and has been winning races, maybe two or three or two, and Hamilton, is getting fifths and sixths and crashing, well, then guess what? This is a serious, serious issue going on. Then he's going to be under the microscope like no tomorrow. Mm. Like, mate, who is this guy? We've paid all this money. He's not getting results. The other guy's winning. This would be much more highlighted if that was going on. But, again, today, one of the takes I took from today, they had a reel showing all the radio chat, and there was one where Leclerc, once he let Hamilton pass, he goes, holy shit, he goes, I didn't realise Sainz was so close to us.
Yeah.
Now, because he was shocked.
Yeah.
So, again, out of the loop.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, there's no communication. 100%, there's no,
In other words, had it known sooner, you should have told me sooner. Yeah. I would have let him through sooner to protect both of us.
Mm.
This is this whole schmozzle.
It's interesting, right? We'll get back to the Ferrari. But if you look at like Red Bull, especially in their heyday, or McLaren, it's almost like they're a step ahead of the race. Like where Max will see, and then where their guys on the pit wall will see. They're almost a step ahead of the race, where it just seems like Ferrari's two steps behind, blindfolded and gagged.
But look at the sprint race, right? So it starts off wet. It starts to get dry. Hamilton comes on and goes, these wets are screwed.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. We should switch the drive. Now, that's what you want. You want the driver to read the play.
Yeah. They're the one there.
That's right. I think we should change the dries. Okay, let's go for mediums. He goes, mate, let's go for softs.
Yeah.
So straight away, you're fucking running 10th or 9th. Why are you going to mediums?
Yeah.
To do what? Finished two places, three places ahead? And by all accounts, the safety car doesn't come out. He catches and passes both McLarens and wins that sprint. But it took him to say, no, give me softs. But I'm going back to this conservatism on this Ferrari pit wall, how they just cannot. And this is why they won't be successful. It hasn't worked for Alonso, hasn't worked for Vettel. So back to Hamilton, right? Mm. Listen, the guy's 40, right? If he's not checking his bank balance three times a day, there's something wrong with him, right? The money he's making is ridiculous. There's a reel going around, I'll send it to you, where they're showing three drivers on the couch getting interviewed at the FIA press conference. And there's these...
Yeah, I've seen it. Like, the money's ticking
and
over.
And he's been there for 5 seconds. He's already up to $35,000. And the other two have barely clicked over 1,000. So, you know, will he win races? Yeah, he'll win a race here or there. He will, okay? Because Charles will have an off day and he'll get it right. We saw in China with the sprint race, when they ran that car low to the ground, he was on it. He took the pole and won. But then guess what? They got disqualified, if you remember, because the car was too low. So clearly this car, you know, and the solution's coming, blah, 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 blah. He's getting closer to Leclerc, but Leclerc's every bit as fast as Max Verstappen. You know, I'm a massive Lewis fan. He was never coming in there and wiping the floor of Charles Leclerc.
No, I never saw that either.
Yeah, but he was always going to struggle too. Whether it's this type of car, because we're hearing the same stories or excuses, as you say, as we're hearing last year in the Mercedes with Russell. Why he couldn't beat Russell. We're just hearing the same sound bites as you were saying last year. Oh, I can't get the rear planted. What Formula One driver can get the rear planted? They all want more grip at the back.
I guess what Tom's talking about though is, and I can understand his point, and he's talking about the actual team, the team overall, and how they're gelling and how they are working as a team. Because yeah, obviously, if you're not having race results, it's always going to be tense, especially as Lewis Hamilton and a Ferrari. Like, what a massive combo!
Well,
that
expectation was there. We saw the launch. You know, there was in the mafia suit.
Almost unwarranted pressure. By the way, almost unwarranted pressure doing that.
But it was all pointing to this was all just supposed to be.
Yeah. Right?
Whereas I'm sitting there going, this is all wrong. Yeah. When I'm agreeing with Tom, like, it just didn't fit.
Well, that's what Tom's saying is why it's imploding. He's saying it's imploding as in, like, the team environment. Lewis isn't going to get on with their culture of how they run that team.
Well,
what do you...
okay, the real issue, it is the culture.
Yeah.
Right? That's, the culture's fucked, okay? Because it's been two steps forward or five steps backwards, one step forward for the last 20 years, okay? You know, it hasn't been since the Schumacher days with Ross Brawn at the helm when he had everything like clockwork. That's the comparison, and that's the outlier. That's why this piece of Ferrari history is an anomaly. There's a period there between 2000 and 2005 where they won five championships in a row. You know, Schumacher won 70 races for that team, right? Impregnable, okay? And it took politics to force him out. Otherwise, he probably wins 06, 07 as well, you know? But since then, it's been one shit show after another. They've gone through all these different managers, bosses, you name it, but we're still seeing the same Ferrari that sits there, doesn't know what to do, can't make a decision, and what? We're going to start blaming this guy because what he's speaking up on the radio and he's being sarcastic.
Well, look, I don't know.
I'm not trying to defend him.
No.
But to me, today was a joke. He's like, you've put him on the softer tyre or the better tyre that part of the race for a reason. So why are you not then saying, well, my point is five laps earlier, they would have seen his catching the clerk. That's when you get on the blow to the clerk and say, mate, Lewis is coming up, move over. He's quicker than you. Regardless of how much quicker. Yeah, it was only by a little bit, but it's not the point. That was the tyre to be on, and those three laps killed some of that tyre life.
Yeah.
Them procrastinating. We'll come back to you.
Yeah.
We'll come back to you.
And 100%. And that's going to ruin a driver mentally. Hearing all that and going through that is already going to destroy him mentally.
All that's happening, what we're hearing from Lewis is his worst nightmare is coming true. Now, if Tom was to call that imploding, well, then let's put under that imploding.
Yeah, I think he's right.
The nightmare is that these blokes are a bunch of amateurs. You know, I've come to this team, you know, they've signed me for a reason.
That's what it seems like.
Well, it's marketing and all that too. We get all that. But like, you know, but they're not making it clear, you know. And he didn't sign to be the number one. It's not like, oh, I'm the number one. You're not going to be number one. That's not what's going on
here. I know. I'm with you.
But there's just basic racing decisions on a pit wall. You go racing to take risks. I've said this before on here. This is why Red Bull's been so successful. You take risks. This is what the glory is all about. You know, zillions of dollars to build these cars, investing, development, to take risks, not sit there and go, oh, we'll get back to you. Oh, we're not sure. Oh, let's go the medium type. Oh, it's all negative. It's all negative.
It's all on the back foot.
Yeah, but negative.
Yeah,
and
I'm with you.
This is a guy.
Yeah.
And Lewis has built a career on taking risks.
Mm.
So whether he's not adjusting or – but this is just how it is. And, you know, he's come out post-race and said, look, you know what, we're still understanding each other. You know, he's been trotting this out a bit as well. But no one has come out – this is the other thing I want to say to Tom. No one has come out from Ferrari and say, this guy needs to shut up. This guy's going – he's doing it the wrong way about it. No one has said that.
I think – but I don't think Ferrari is going the right way about it.
That's my point.
Yeah. I'm with you. I agree. But I think it's like fire fueling fire. Like – Them piss farting around on the pit wall is just not going to help that situation, and then he's just not going to help that situation. That's all that's happening.
Well, again, they're hot blooded racing car drivers.
Yeah,
you know they're not robots. What's the alternative? How are you supposed to act to show? I mean, he got sarcastic there. His last pit call was, "Do you want me to let Zane through as well?" I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Like I get it. I 100% get it. And I'm not saying he's in the wrong. I'm not saying, and I don't think Tom's saying that he's in the wrong. He's just saying the situation is just falling apart. It's unraveling.
Well, it's only unraveling because Ferrari are a mess.
Well, yeah, 100%.
Let's make that clear. It's not him.
I don't think it's him either.
Yeah.
But I think Ferrari is a mess. Like, you can see that. Everyone can clearly see that.
Yeah.
But if Lewis Hamilton isn't the same Lewis Hamilton as 6 years ago, though.
Oh, of course not. He's 40.
He's 40. You got to go over the peak at some point.
Well, it's not the peak that you go over. You know, you just start thinking more. That's all it is. You know, as you get older, you get more mature. This is life. This is life.
Yeah, what Wayne Rainey and Kevin Swans used to say about Suzuka. He says, when we got older, those barriers used to look a whole lot closer.
Because you're thinking more. You're just thinking. The little things become big things.
Yeah.
The things that... And that's why they stop driving with their gut. It should be driving on instinct. This is how they got to where they are. That's what keeps the top line drivers young and fresh, is because they still drive on their instinct. And that's the problem now. All this data, over data, don't do that. You know, we'll try this. It just floods it with too much info, overload info of technical information
that
just stops it from just drive on your gut, you know. So, I mean, look, he's getting a bit closer to Leclerc, but, you know, what we saw today will just keep happening. It's been happening for the last 20 years. You know, that's just my take on it. Like, today, when I saw him close up on Leclerc and he's like, well, what do you want me to do? What am I just going to sit here?
Mm.
And the fact that, we'll get back to you. This is fucking ridiculous.
I asked Tom this question last week, or week before. Do you see Charles winning a title in the next 5 years?
Look, you know, probably not.
Mm.
You know, you have to say no. Because he's got this contract for the next... Is there another 3 years at Ferrari?
Mm.
Okay, so, you know, what has to give for that to happen? Like, you know, it's actually mirroring Kimi Raikkonen's career. Okay, Kimi Raikkonen spent like 6 years at McLaren, maybe more, for nothing. You know, and he should have won a couple of titles.
West McLaren?
Yes. There was a couple of years there. That car was the best car. Mm.
And a few mechanical issues and...
Right, no, but McLaren just really fucked it up, you know. And then it took for him to finally go, I've had enough, I'm leaving, and goes to Ferrari in his first try, in amazing circumstances, wins his championship. But really, you know, this is mirroring to me, like, I really feel for this guy. I do, like, he's a top three driver.
Yeah.
He really is, but again, he's being wasted, and you hear him be sarcastic on the radio as well.
Yeah, you do, yeah.
And this is my point, like, he's at the end of his tether. Like, what's going on here? We've tried this, we've tried that. And he's a bit emotional, you know. Nothing wrong with that. But what he's saying is just wearing his heart in his sleeve because he's fucking frustrated.
Mm.
You know, this is his seventh season seventh season at Ferrari.
It's amazing.
For five or six wins.
Yeah.
That is a ridiculous stat. You know, it should be, you know, and back to your point, does someone else take him? So, you know, swings and roundabouts. You just don't know how the F1 merry-go-round works on a certain time of with Max. Who knows? But
you got to be lucky to get in the right car at the right point.
Yeah, but
as
the
well.
Point is, this is the thing. Back to the Lewis signing. This was supposed to be the guy. Leclerc was supposed to be the guy.
Yeah, 100%.
They've signed him for 5-6 years. He's come for their junior academy. So then all of a sudden, let's go sign this 40-year-old, you know, conglomerate that's got his own brand.
Yeah.
You know, and well, okay, what message is that sending to him? So, again, they've made it clear, no, you're both equal. That's fine. But Ferrari just don't know how to handle that. They're making a mess of it. Mm. They're making an absolute mess of it. So, and then the car, I mean, I couldn't believe today two Williams were in front of him at one point. Yeah. I mean, credit to Williams coming up.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming at the start either. Yeah. Now, Williams has been now Q3 cars.
Yeah.
Most races.
Well, and they both got top 10 on the weekend. What did they get? Albon 5th and Sainz 9th. Sainz
made that late lunge on Lewis.
In the
last lap there. So another lap he probably gets him. So, you know, this Williams car's coming up as well. Yeah.
Which is great to see. Like, it's awesome to see. Obviously, Williams has had so much history in the sport, but to just have another team and brand up there that's not just the same regular ones. But it's as we say, like, someone's going to have to finish third, someone's going to have to finish fourth, someone's going to have to finish fifth, you know?
We're just in a weird hole at the moment. We've only seen, what, two world champions in the last
it's weird,
10 years.
It? Yeah.
You know, and back to this Oscar thing, like, you've got this group at the moment. You've got Leclerc, you've got Russell, you've got Lando, all come from this generation, the one before this one. And are they just going to be bridesmaids for their whole careers? And the proof will be in the pudding if Oscar comes out of nowhere this year.
Yeah.
As Tom mentioned last time, it's his, what? He's now won more races
than
Lando.
6-5 now, that's isn't right. it? Yeah.
And what? The year they come good, and Lando's been there 5 years. He's been there 5 years. What? Oscar just, thanks very much, there's a world championship. Yeah. So there's almost a weird connotation.
It is weird, and like there's a bit of unfair comparison because again I don't know why I'm.
So excuse me, James, I'm just got to take.
He's sniffing. He's not sniffing cocaine. He's sniffing the Thai. Tom actually ordered some of that.
Yeah, it's coming. It says Christmas. Yeah, I'll just leave that there. Trying to keep answers.
Sorry, I'm gonna be distracted for the rest of the pod now.
I interrupt you there, mate.
There's almost some unfair comparisons between Lando and Oscar, though, because Lando came in when McLaren wasn't the McLaren of today.
That's time, yeah.
So I get that, but he's had time in the seat and he's had time in the car and he knows the championship, he knows the tracks, and he could look at the back at that data. So realistically, Lando should be the one leading the title. He should be the one, I wouldn't say cruising to the title, but he should be that clear number one driver.
Yeah, but this is where Zach panicked, you know, and you know, Lando is the guy, okay?
He's
and
supposed
that's why,
to be
well,
the guy.
No, these are the analogies used. Like, you know, if Merck was about giving Lewis an eighth championship, you don't sign George Russell. You keep Bottas. You know, if McLaren was about Lando Norris, you keep Danny Ricciardo or get another Danny Ricciardo.
But did they expect Oscar to be so good?
No, that's the point. It's all Zach wanted, because, you know, Zach's this guy, and you know, credit to him, he's put this great team together, but he's this bit of a cowboy. Oh, I want to have the two best drivers, man. Yeah, this American,
brash.
He wants to brag, right? Yeah. So he just wanted to get the two best drivers out there. Well, that's what he's got. You know, they're so evenly matched, okay? And that's why Lando has taken time to adjust, and it's thrown him 100%. Who's this guy? And as we've said, he's not fluffed. You know, you can't rattle this kid. You know, he just gets the job done. Okay, no worries, nonchalant.
Wins, it's the same. He's got the exact same expression if he wins or if he comes 10th.
Yeah, well, he showed a bit of emotion today when he got out of the car.
Yeah, he did the gritty or whatever.
But this is the thing. This is definitely thrown, because I'm sure Lando would have thought, well, okay, I've seen off signs because he came in and beat signs at the start. Ricciardo was supposed to come in and show him the way. Well, that went nowhere. Mm. So Lando would have got caught up in this, well, I'm going to be the number one. We heard this stupid quote, and someone will put this on a T-shirt, I'm sure, you know.
The Lando era?
We've had the Senna era, we've had the Schumacher era, we're going to have Lando Norris, so this is Zach Brown. I mean, what a ridiculous thing to say.
Yeah.
Just, you know, and look, that Andre Stella, the guy that runs the team, he's ex-Ferrari. So we saw it last year. When it got a bit too close, they didn't know what to do.
Yeah,
so if it does, at the moment, Oscar's got the upper hand, 4 wins to 1, 19-point lead. I mean, we're only a quarter away from the season. But if it gets to the nitty-gritty and it gets tight, we're going to see at McLaren what we saw today at Ferrari. They will be too scared to make a decision.
I do like Zach Brown, though, and I respect him a lot. Because he does open up to the media. Yep. He kind of says it how it is, and he doesn't just give a fluff answer to it.
He's been refreshing, a refreshing team leader.
100%. Definitely. And he's good at saying, okay, we're going to let the boys race. Yeah, get that sniff into you. If you haven't watched the vlog, you can watch us all sniff that in the Thailand vlog. It's It's basically 45 minutes of us sniffing that. But he does, he is refreshing in that sense. He does say, you know, let them race. I agree. If it comes down to the nitty gritty, it's going to be very awkward. But if it comes down to the nitty gritty, I'm still putting all my chips on Oscar.
Yeah.
But I don't think Lando can, he can't handle the heat now.
Yeah. Look, we saw a small mistake from Oscar in Melbourne.
Yeah, it's just the Aussie curse. But I always say this though, Danby, the racing gods every year will give you one DNF.
Okay, or one bad race. I'm with you there. There's been plenty of history of that. You're right. You're actually a good call there.
Yeah. So everyone gets one bad race here. It's just from the racing gods. You can't have a perfect season unless you're like Jet Lawrence.
The curse at Melbourne is that no Australians ever finished on the podium.
Yeah. It's a curse.
There was one year where Ricciardo did get it, but he got disqualified.
Yeah, it's all right.
But I'm trying to say that, you know, for all Oscar's calmness and coolness, and that's exactly what he is, but in Melbourne, he just had to get out of the throttle when they went off into the wet, and he takes the lead and he wins, you know. But he got too caught up in, oh, I can miss my chance to pass Lando. So it is there. I mean,
everyone's got it. Everyone's got it.
Please, I'm not dissing this kid, right? The kid is calm as anything, but there are moments there where he does make some minor mistakes.
There's a lot less than a lot of other people.
No. Well, the point is, Lando's making too many.
Yeah, qualifying races.
Today was another one.
Yeah.
You know, like he said to himself, I just need to take the pole position. So,
or just take the second going into the first corner.
That the lesson today is both McLaren drivers do not take on Max at turn one if he's on the front row.
Yeah, it's
and
not
I think
worth it.
I think what happened, I think to me what we've everything we've heard from Lando post race, there's a clip going around where they show Button talking to the three drivers on the bus, whatever it is, but Button's interviewing Lando and he goes, oh well, you know, with Max. You know, that's how it is. And Oss is like, what are you talking about? Like, what do you mean he can't pass you around turn one? Like, he's giving him this look. Like, it's not how it was for me. Mm. Yeah, but that's interesting. And that I took from that after qualifying, given they're on the front row, I think Lana just overthought this the whole 24 hours. I've got to get him at turn one. I've got to. If I have a chance, if I get it. And I think that's what played out today. He just got so caught up in... It's me and Max. I've got it, you know.
But I think Max can psych you out as well. He will psych out a lot of drivers. And to be that driver that thinks, oh, you know, I don't give a fuck. I can pass him. And will say wild stuff like that or think it. That's the one that's not going to get psyched out. That's the cool, calm, collected guy. Yeah, and that's the guy that's going to pass him in the turn one.
Yeah.
Oscar Piastri.
Yeah.
Where, you know, and for mere mortals like us, we're going to get psyched out. You know, it's not a crazy thing to say. It's just what's happening to Lando. Maybe he'll overcome that. Maybe he's not. But going up against Max Verstappen, where you know you have to almost throw it into the wall or throw both of you into the wall to pass him is the only way you've got
to
do it.
Are you prepared to crash? It's as simple as that. And,
yeah.
You know, and this is the thing, back to Max. You know, the longer this championship goes and the more he gets out of it, as in not in contention, right? He's just going to get even more aggressive in first corners.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So we've already seen this super aggressive Max Verstappen that we know him to be, but I'm saying it now, like, take this morning, you know, if he's 40 points behind and then somehow manages to get the pole position down the road, well, there's a chance for a race win. Oh, I've got a chance to win a race today. I'm not in this championship anymore. He's going to more say, if you don't, you want to take me on, you're the guys battling.
Yeah.
You're going to take yourself out. Don't even try. Yeah. That's going to be more. 100%. More weight.
Yeah.
That'll have more weight to it.
I couldn't agree more. That's what it's like.
That makes it juicy for us, you know.
It was a good start of the race though in Miami. The first 25 laps were good. Yeah. The race just ran itself out.
Yeah, look, back to this one stop. See, what they need to do, they need to dig up the bitumen. And
you like how I ran with that?
I like how you just rearrange my quotes and stuff. That's quite funny. But again, the rain was supposed to come. It didn't come.
Yeah, well, you can't rely on the weather every time.
But when they say it's going to be a one-stop, I'm like, fuck it, we have these boring one-stops again. It just...
Yeah, 100%.
And look, I was hoping one of those VSCs would be a full safety car because that would have really turned it on its head a bit with different tyres.
I'm with you. At the same time, my fanboy was thinking, I don't want it to happen because I want Oscar to be 7 seconds out in front and just chill for the rest of the race. But as just a racing fan that wants to watch a good race, you want a safety car. It's like Bathurst.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's 100 laps in.
Been no safety car. There was one there 2 years ago. They didn't have one until the last hour or something.
Crazy. For our international listeners, that's like the greatest race in Australia. But it hasn't done, hasn't given us anything, Bathurst lately.
No. It used to be really juicy. It used to close it all up, 20 laps to go, and, you know.
That was only 10 years ago it used to be juicy.
Yeah, I remember.
Now these days, it's a shit house.
Jimmy, let's talk protection, because what you wear actually matters in a crash. Nemium armored leggings have a 3-star impact protection, 4-star comfort, and the thinnest CE level 2 armor available. More protection, less bulk.
Tommy, one of the many reasons I love this product is because of the comfort. You can wear these Nemium leggings underneath like your jeans, your normal chino pants, mate. When I'm riding, I don't want to be dressed up like a stiff motorcycle rider wearing leather everywhere. I want to be wearing my normal jeans, getting a coffee, whatever, looking cool. I love how these leggings just go under everything seamlessly and you just fit in with the normal crowd.
I mean, there's no overheating, there's no stiffness. And look, we really believe in this product.
Yep.
It's MotoCap tested. It's proven to have a 5.42 second slide time. These things are very, very hard to get in this industry. Serious riders wear Nemium. Upgrade your ride at Nemium.clothing.
I love it. And use code Nemium Republica for 10% off.
Now back to the podcast.
Yeah, so don't know what else to cover in the race today. The Williams, I mean, the Aston Martin, that's just fallen nowhere.
Let's talk about Yuki Tsunoda. What do you think? You said the next two Arrow races.
Hang on a second. I need a sniff of this. Do you want
some? Yeah, give us some of that. I forgot about this. You said the Arrow races, he was going to do something. Wait for him now. I think he had like a 10th and a DNF.
Look, I think he's doing better than anybody else has been in that car so far. You know, we're just seeing how impossible this car is to drive. You know, the only analogy I'm going to give to you, I thought about this, right? You go on about all these guys are no good. Well, how did Jorge Lorenzo fare when he went to HRC? How has anybody else ridden that HRC when Marquez was there?
True, but Lorenzo was also a 3-time world champion.
And what did he do on that bike?
Yeah, but at least he still did something in his career.
Yeah, but we're talking a direct comparison to a great, right? I'm not saying Lorenzo isn't a great, but the point is, how disappointing was the cheeseburger?
Yeah, he was. He forced him into
early retirement.
It was probably 8 kilos overweight. That Repsol had about three extra O's in that at Repsol.
Made Q3.
Yeah, look.
It's a start. Come on, give him some credit.
He's doing better. 100%
That's all I said. He's doing better.
He's doing better. But I'm not. What I'm saying is everyone thinks he's like a top 6 driver. That's all I'm saying.
No, that's not the guy. I didn't say that. I never said he was. No, I didn't say he was a top 6 driver. Okay. I said he can probably get that car into Q3, you know, and at times he has and at times he hasn't.
Mm.
But we're just seeing when that car's off, it is way off. We've seen.
I understand Max is, and you can't compare it to him because he's just on another level. And, you know, and that car's built around him.
Well, it is and it isn't, but just it's just got this very small window that he can only manage to get into. That's all it is. But, yeah.
Mate, what do you think of... I've hardly spoken to you about MotoGP. What do you think of this season so far? What do you made of it?
Well, I think for me, the real story of the season is Pecco Bagnaia.
Okay.
Okay. You know, and the reason I say that is because, you know, this guy's a double champion, lost the title last year. Obviously, we're now seeing, you know, with all these crashes he had on Saturday, which now Mark's crashed a couple of times. But, you know, Mark said... This is the interesting thing I found is that he said at the test, you know, Pecco's a reference. You know, I'll be learning from Pecco, you know, and we haven't seen Kiwi from Pecco, right? And the issue for me is that Pecco's issue isn't Mark, it's Alex. Okay? Here's a race the other day where Mark crashed, and not only did Alex beat him, but he finished behind a Yamaha.
Yeah.
So I hear you guys talking last week, you know, like, we're waiting for this to click for Pecco. We're just waiting for this, and I'm not going to say, you know, click the fingers, but we're all just waiting for this to click for Pecco where we see the Pecco that we know. But I'm not sure what's going to happen, you know, because this bike, and this is what I'm getting, this is the point I want to make about the season, is that, you know, this hybrid 24.9, you help me what it's called.
Whatever it is. It doesn't really have a name, this bike.
So I'll flip that and say this. We are seeing... crazy results from Alex Marquez.
Yeah.
And good on him for breaking the duck.
Oh, okay? Awesome to see.
Great result.
Everyone's going to be happy for that.
Right? the fact that Morbidelli is up there.
Mm.
Okay, so that's the best comparison I'm going to use here, right? Here you are, Frankie Morbidelli, the so-called has been over the hill, move along. Digi is on the newer bike,
yeah,
and can't get near Morbidelli.
Right? Nah, he's been close to him. He's also been injured, but I get, Morbidelli's had a better season so far.
Okay, okay. Yeah, yeah. The Thurman Aldegear,
yeah,
is shining.
Yeah,
coming through on the 24 bike.
Yeah,
right. So, you know, the reason Pecco won't go back to the 24, which is the obvious answer, is because Mark is making the 25 work.
Mm.
He's riding beyond the problems, which he's been doing his whole career. This is why he's a shit development rider.
Yeah. True.
Right. It's a shit development because it doesn't matter. I don't care about the bike because I'll just ride around.
Yeah.
So that's the rock and the hard place for Pecco, because it'd be just easier to plug himself back into the bike that he knows inside out, which is the 24 bike that he won the most race. What, he won 12? How many races last year?
Something like that, yeah.
And then see him beat Alex, because that's the first port of call. He's not going to come out next week and beat, you know, I wouldn't think so, but it's the form of this 24 bike is at such a level that the 25, even in the hands of Pecco, is still not good enough to beat a 24, never mind beating Mark. And so, you know, you mentioned it. We both talked about this, you know. We thought Qatar was the one.
That was the barometer for the season.
Thought, that's what we thought.
That's what I was saying, yeah.
But you know, of the tracks coming up, the two, help agree or disagree, the two Pecco tracks are Assen and Mugello.
Mm.
Is that fair assessment, do you think? Of the races coming up that are supposedly Pecco tracks.
Le Mans? What's he done in Le Mans? Jorge Martin got him last year, didn't he? I'm pretty
sure. Yeah, but even Marquez got him. But then he had a bad Saturday. He had a bad...
Yeah, and that's been an issue.
And this is the thing with Pecco. I want to say something else. This is a guy that's based his career, and this is how he races. He builds slowly.
Yeah.
He comes in on Friday. We don't really see much of him. Sometimes he bombs out in Q, you know, doesn't make Q1. Or sorry, Q2.
Yeah.
Right?
More this season than anything. I get what you're saying.
Right?
Yeah.
And then bang, come Saturday qualifying, he's on the pole. Right? But this, he's up against a guy. He's pushing for a brick wall from the first lap.
Mm.
This is the difference. He's got a teammate that from the minute the pit lane opens in practice one, he's on it.
Mm.
So this is the pressure that's coming Pecco's way, what he's got to deal with. He's never had this before, where he's had someone in the same garage as him, you know, that's on a bike that he's supposed to know better than him, and he's chasing his tail.
And the thing, and what would play into his mind is every race he's finished, he's come first.
Who's this we're talking about?
Marquez.
Yeah, go on.
Marquez. He's had 10 races. He's won 8 of them, DNF 2. Coda's basically DNF.
Yeah, yeah.
And another thing I think that would play into his mind is him being third and then, you know, he's not used to having every week Ducati celebrate and it's not him they're celebrating.
Well, that's exactly right.
You know, that's going to play with you mentally no matter who you are.
Yeah.
You know, it happened with Rossi and Lorenzo. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's just, as you said, he's going to build and he's going to build into the season. But the only reason Bagnon has got a race win and he's still in this championship right now is because of Marc Marquez and his own fault.
Yeah, of course.
And we said this from the start. Yeah. It was, and I was talking about it again, but it's all in between the years for him. It's a race against him, and I like that mistake in Jerez shouldn't have happened.
You're talking about Mark now,
yeah,
yeah. But look, this is the crash that Pecco had. This is what Pecco said after the race. I'm not defending Mark here, but he said I've had this crash a lot last year. You know, as soon as you let go of the brakes and turn it in, the front just washes out.
Mm.
You know, we saw many. Martin at Mugello, Martin and Jerez, Pecco at Silverstone, Pecco at the sprint race at Barcelona.
Yeah.
You just saw these silly two laps to go errors from Martin and Pecco where they're just coming into a corner and the front just, and you go, what? And we're looking and go, what? No pressure, no one, you know. And as for these Mark mistakes, like I heard you mention last week about being rattled. Like to me, that's not how he functions. I don't believe so, but I think he was more rattled, if that's the word, that he thought he stuffed up the start devices, okay, because he lowered the bike and he got a bad start, right? So it wasn't due to the devices. The devices were in place, but that messed with him because he was like, I've got to get back up at an open air. This whole argy-bargy stuff, he invites it because this is where he's a – He's, do I call him conniving? You know, Mark, if it's one thing Mark Marquez gets away with, if that's the word, is it? He'll get involved in other people's accidents and not blow any blame. If you remember Valencia 2023, when Martin dropped back and then made this charge and he sent Marquez to the moon with that pass.
Yeah.
Now, that was Dane.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right? Marquez got up and goes, no worries, mate.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember that.
I was done the same.
Yeah.
You see, other riders, oh.
They would have flipped it. Right?
Because guess what? What he's saying, what Marquez is really saying is it like, so when I do this to you, don't come complain to
exactly
me. Exactly
right.
With Bezzy.
Yeah.
He tells Bezzy, mate, go talk to the wall. And Bezzy tries to pick a foot. What are you doing, mate? Like, in other words, that's Marquez give or take. Yeah. So
no, I agree. What Marquez, like, he's been on the rough end of the stick a couple of times, but he's never gone marched to the FIM and gone, I want this guy.
But there's also plenty of times where he's just barged through. Probably should have got penalties.
Clearly.
Right?
Argentina against poor Rossi.
That's his. But even last year in Jerez, there was a race last year. He came off or something and he was just pushing people out the way. We didn't see it on the camera.
I think it was against Mir. I think it was against Mir.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. 100%. You're right. I still think he was... I still think he was... rattled to a degree, whether it be the start procedure, that's the thing with Marquez. I still think you have to beat him up because he's not used to that. He's not used to someone giving it back to him. It's kind of like that Verstappen thing. Mm-hmm. You know how intimidating it would be going up against Marc Marquez, who's got no issues throwing it down the road and taking you out at the same time. So beating him up is just about might be the only way to do it. And Rossi was one to try and beat him up for a few years there. And that's really the only person who's done it. The only reason other people have won titles is because he's been injured for 3 years and been on a Honda.
Yeah.
So he actually hasn't really been up against someone who's been bashing bars with him because it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Danny Pedrosa never did it. Yeah. Jorge Lorenzo never did it.
He was out in his own race.
Exactly.
You know, right. You never had that.
And I think that's the only way you can even have a crack at trying to get under his skin.
Yeah, but
and
you saw Dovi beat him like 3 times in a row at Austria.
Guitar as well.
Guitar's another one.
Alex Rins did it in Silverstone.
Yeah.
So in those battles, he actually probably isn't the victor most times. But the thing with Marquez is, I just think he intimidates everyone out of it.
Well, clearly.
Yeah.
You know, there was talk during the week.
But I don't think Pecco Bagnaia is intimidated. I don't think he's intimidated at all.
No, of course not. But at the end of the day, he knows he's up against... Yeah, this. He's respecting what he's done in the sport. Is it great? You know, and kudos for Pecco, the way he's handling it. You're right. He's not letting himself get involved in the politics of it all. But like you said, how can you not... He's human. This was his team. And everyone said this. Mark's going to go in there and do an assassination job. You know, and others turn that team into his team.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it with the celebrations.
Yeah.
There's
two ways of looking at celebrations. You're right. It could be an assassination job where it's turning it into his team. But also, Bagnaia is such a different character.
When he wins,
he is chill, calm. It's not a big fuss. He's just doing his own thing. When Mark is dancing.
That's his biggest strength. And that's his biggest strength. You know,
for sure.
Under pressure. And he's cracked a few times under pressure, Pecco, at different stages. But more times than not, you know, we've seen this guy that's so solid. He's just so solid. When he gets out front, And this is what we're waiting to see. This is what we're waiting for. We're all waiting to see this Pecco that takes the pole position, you know, takes the lead at turn one and scoots off. And Mark, I think what we're talking about is that, you know, this scenario where Mark's going to have to override the bike to pass him and crash. That's the Marquez that we're going to go, oh, you know, here he goes again. We've thrown it down the road. But these two mistakes, he said himself, he goes, they weren't, you know, they were just... What do you call them? They were easy. They were soft. They weren't...
Well, Coda definitely was.
Yeah, he just ran over... Well.
Yeah, I know.
Now, these weren't overriding...
But he still crashed. And he can still crash again. The thing is if any... I just don't think... there might be one or two races this year where Bagnaia can run away with it. Maybe. It's not going to be like last year, the year before, or the year before that. It's just not going to be. Mm. It's just not going to be when you're fighting against Marc Marquez on that same bike. Mugello will be interesting because that's a bogey track for Marquez. I think he's only won there once in 2014.
Yeah, but see, these bogey tracks you talk about, right? Qatar was one, okay? Mugello, probably Assen. Well, he's won at Assen as well. But you got to understand, this is a guy that was riding a Honda based around a front end, just making it dance on a front wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
these are tracks. Sepang's supposed to be a bogey track. Yeah, there he was flying around and testing on this Ducati. Even last year, got the podium surprisingly. But I think that form's got to go out the window. Well, these so-called tracks that are marked bogey tracks, this is based around a bike that had a front end that he just had to dance the front wheel. On those tracks, that did not work.
Yeah.
That riding style did not work, hence why they were bogey tracks.
I understand that, but they just were still. Like, that's the bike he was on, and that's just how it is. If it's, all I'm saying is it's going to be interesting because that's Mugello's a Ducati track, and now he's on a Ducati. And it's his track.
Pecco has been unstoppable at Mugello for the last 3 years.
But if we get to Mugello and just say Bags is quick all weekend, the quickest, is Marquez going to settle for second? Or is he going to try and fight him?
Just on that. This is something a soundbite, and I haven't even picked up on at Qatar. When he got to Qatar this year, Marquez, and the press conference, he goes, this is a track, you know, I've marked down as red. Or he made some sort of comment.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, so he's clearly got a playbook here in his mind where he's got the calendar and he's putting an asterisk against tracks that he thinks that his brother and Pecco, because he goes, my brother and Pecco are better here. This is a red track for me. Or blue. He didn't say red, but he was basically making it clear that this isn't my track.
Yeah.
Right? And he's surprised. So I'm thinking, well, okay, there must be other tracks in the calendar where he's put, and you know, one would probably be Mugello, one would probably be Assen. Mm. You know, and like you said, you know, if that's the case, and what, he's there on the last lap, and he's got plenty of tyre left on the rear. What, he's not going to...
Oh, he's going to have a crack.
That's the point. The point back to what Qatar was making that you just said is that it was not supposed to be a track that got him suited, but he ran off the whole weekend at Qatar, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it didn't help Pecco. But again, pressure. Pecco crashed in qualifying because of that building, yeah, like, I've got to get this front row.
He's got to find that extra 2-3 tenths. So he might not have had to have fined 3-2-3-1 year
you
ago.
You saw that crash in qualifying from Pecco. That bike, you can't back it into a corner. It just doesn't settle. And that's why he came in too hot. And he tried to settle it and it just went out from him. You know, next minute starting 10. Well, that was the weekend done.
It's going to be interesting. Like, we can talk about it all night with Marquez. It's in the Ducati situation with Bagnaia. It is. And it's just one of many stories in
Just one last thing with Bagnaia, back to, you know, so those tracks you talk about, Mugello or Assen, what if we get to those tracks and he still can't beat Alex? Never mind Mark.
Yeah, then he's not doing it.
You know, it's just...
I don't see him winning the title this year. If Marquez is 8 wins from 8 finishes,
yeah,
that's proof's in the pudding right there.
We're only talking about this is because the guy has crashed twice. Okay, one from the lead, and if Coda wasn't wet, that doesn't. I mean, ifs, buts, maybes.
But I know
it was a wet ripple strip, clearly, right? But and as for the one at Jerez, there, yeah, sure. Like, it's the first time he'd been in a pack. That was another factor, you know, hadn't bikes in front of him because he's been leading the whole year. But it just comes back to this stigma. And you help me out. I think it was 2019 or 2017. He against Dovi. He had like 29 and a half crashes for the year because of the half save at the corner. Remember at Valencia?
Yeah.
He actually nearly fell.
He almost lost through the title. That was when he almost threw the title. And he didn't have to go in that hard. That's so crazy.
This is who this guy is.
Yeah, I know. He is, right? Yeah.
Because at any given moment,
yeah,
he could be leading by 20 seconds, but then throw it down the road for no reason.
Yeah. It's so exciting.
Why MotoGP is so knife-edged to watch, because at any given moment, these guys could be on their ass, you know?
MotoGP, when Marc Marquez, it missed him a lot those years.
Oh, look, if he... It did. Of course it did.
Because you know, he just brings so much drama, and we've just talked about him versus Bagnaia for the past 20 minutes now. Yeah, because... Yeah. He brings that much drama, and then, okay, he's won 8 races and he's dominating, but for some reason he's losing the championship.
Yeah, but there was, I don't know if you caught up on this, but during the week, a few riders were talking post-race. The sound bites were coming out. These are the midfield guys, right? Once he got back on the bike, right?
Yeah.
And they could not believe how quickly he passed them.
I know.
Like, they saw the bike and how fucked it was. But they said within 2 corners, he was gone.
Well, he passed all the test riders and Aleix. I think that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, but
maybe a couple of other, like a rail for Nando's.
They were making the comment that the bike was beat up.
Yeah, it was.
And he was going around like had another 200 horsepower over them. Like,
yeah, I know. But he makes the sport that much more interesting, doesn't he?
Well, of course he does. And that's the thing. For all the haters out there, and there's plenty of them, you know, when he goes, it's going to miss that. You know, there was that period back 15 years ago where Rossi threatened to leave MotoGP to go to Rally.
Mm, yeah, I remember.
And had that happened, MotoGP might have fallen down a bit because at the time there was nobody else. Yeah. And that's not so much the case now. We've got Acosta and now all to get. But right now, this guy, since he's come back from these injuries, it's you're like watching a different sport.
Oh, look
at
Jerez. Look how big Jerez was on the weekend.
Yeah, it was getting Spanish.
Yeah.
They go crazy there. But just, yeah, it's... There just seems to be always drama surrounding this guy, good or bad or otherwise.
There's always
whether it's you know, the crazy pole position out of nowhere. I mean, even that first race back for Honda 2 years ago at Portimao, how would he take that pole position?
Yeah, that was.
You're
nuts.
Like, what happened here? Yeah. Oh, it's Marc Marquez. So, you know, I mean, we both love him, but it's more an admiration to think, well, look what he's come from.
Yeah, 100%. You know. I've and the listeners will know this, I've been a fan ever since he was in the 125 days. Yeah, I've just always loved how he went about it. And I was, you know, always a fan of Rossi as well, and I'm a fan of everyone that's there. It's just the way I appreciate the way he rides. And this is the same with Formula One. I love aggressive races. I think that's what makes them the champion. And they make the show. If everyone was just Danny Pedrosa, and I love Danny Pedrosa, you wouldn't be watching it.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
100%.
You know, you need someone to add some fire.
If it was all vanilla, mate. If it was all vanilla, you wouldn't turn the TV on.
Exactly right. You need to have that. You've got to have those personalities. People forget how aggressive Rossi was back in the day. Like, it's just, that's racing. You know, that's just how it is. And that's why he's got, you know, such a massive fan base. And that's why people tune in. It's almost like the Floyd Mayweather thing, right? I don't know if you're up to date with boxing, people love to see him lose. And he trash talks so much.
People wanted him to shut it.
And the people wanted to shut it, and it never worked. And people watch MotoGP either to see him win or to see him lose.
And McGregor created that for himself as well. Conor McGregor.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, he had the mouth.
Yeah.
But people wanted to see it get shut.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So, and it's the same but different thing. But it's just, he makes a show. And the show, how good has it been this year, even though he's won 8 out of 10 races?
Yeah,
the racing's been awesome, and then even like going into the mid pack stuff. Like, okay, Alex Marquez is a mid pack, but we thought he might be. He's won a race, and like, is he a title contender? Morbidelli has come out of nowhere on that Ducati. He's found his balls in Ducati. Okay.
Yeah,
Fermín Aldeguer is doing amazing as a rookie, which is great to see. But that's all just credit to Gigi. Like, it's all crazy. Dillinger.
It's crazy.
You know, he's the reason where. If you make a bike that's rideable for so many different riding styles, which must be so hard to do, it must be such a hard thing to do, and then be the head 2 years ahead of everyone else in development, it's such a kudos to him.
The fact that this 24, whatever you want to call it, bike is still that much further in front of everyone else, you know, it's an 18-month-old development bike. Like, think about it, it came in of 23 or started, you know, that's insane. And the other point I wanted to make about the 25 bike is that, you know, this is going to be the tricky thing for Ducati, right? So to me, the measuring stick, if I'm going to say such thing, is Alex Marquez is finishing up his brother's ass at these races. Mm. When they were doing all those 1-2s.
Yeah, right? for the first three rounds,
maybe Mark was holding something in reserve. That's a fair assumption too, maybe. But we're all waiting for that to stop.
Mm.
We're all sitting going, nah, look, Alex won't be able to sustain this, right? At some point, he's going to stop coming third and someone else, you know, whether it's your mate Martin, and that's a different bet we've got going on there when he finally comes back on the Aprilia.
We'll get to that.
No, but I'm just making the point that, like, you know, the reason Alex, and that's my point before about Morbidelli and Aldeguer being so good, because that's how good this bike is.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? But if this bike is still that good at the back end of the year, right?
Yeah.
And because the 25 isn't developed and isn't made that next step, well, then what do they do next year, right? Because guess what? This 25 half hand-me-down, whatever you want to call it, is going to now become their bikes and they're all going to struggle.
Mm.
So do they disguise the 24 bike and call it the 25?
I wouldn't be surprised they do that.
Seriously, why would you discard a bike that's getting all these podiums for Morbidelli and Alex, and for the bike, the newer bike that only one man can currently ride.
And it's only one more year in that regulations anyway.
Yeah, I know, but my point is that we're seeing, and this goes back to Bezzecchi, you know. Bezzecchi was made to look better than what he was 2 years ago because of the bike.
Mm. Well, he did nothing on a Ducati last year anyway.
Well, that's even more so. The fact that because the rear, the new tyre affected that model, the 23 one, okay?
Yeah, but Marquez fucking worked around it. And I know Marquez, I get it.
Let's take him out of it.
But even Alex Marquez had results on that bike.
Yeah, agreed. But this is my point. This bike, this 24 bike is making, I'm not saying they're no good, they're not good riders, but it's making them look a bit better than what they are.
It just enhances their already amazing ability. It's all does.
This is back to the VR46 comparison. The Digi and Morbidelli, you know, is Digi a better rider when fully fit?
Than Morbidelli, yeah.
You have to say yes. Yeah, you know, he's younger, he's all this sort of stuff, but yet he at some point this year he has to start beating Morbidelli regularly.
Yeah.
But that I'm saying that's gonna be reflective of the bike.
Mm.
If he can't, it shows that this bike is still this machine that's got the goods. And what do they do next year? Next minute how many races we've had, like top six Ducatis, top five, a couple of races.
Yeah.
I'm saying that changes. If a 26 isn't half good, not good, and then the 25 is still what it is. KTM, Honda and Honda, they'll start coming in between, So, like you said, it's only one more year left of the regs. I'd just be saying, this is the 25, but it's really still the 24.
Yeah.
Imagine them using a 24 and 26.
It'd be crazy. And that's how far they've developed that bike ahead of everyone.
Keep going.
I was just going to say, then you look at Aprilia and it's how backwards they're gone.
Sorry, are you on to this?
Yeah. Well, mate, Martin, unlucky is a word you could use for Qatar, and it sucks for the championship.
Oh, 100%.
And I said to you before Qatar, I said he'd win a race this year, and you laughed.
I said he won't even get a podium, is what I said.
And I don't. And now coming back from those injuries, I don't know what I can see him do. I don't see him winning a race now.
I just think of all the bikes, they've just gone backwards the most. That's
well,
how
they're
I
relying
see it.
On. The only person that's riding that bike now, but take out Savadori, is Rael Fernandez, who is actually familiar with that bike. Bezzecchi is doing sweet fuck all.
Yeah.
He's constant Q1s. And Iguro, who's a rookie, he's actually doing amazing.
Yeah, but see, the thing with the rookies, and we saw this for Costa last year, I wanted to bring this up.
Yeah.
Right? You know, they've got no reference.
Yeah, blank canvas.
So this is why, you know, Bezzecchi's got something to compare it to. Martin's got something, they're comparing it to Martin's comparing it to a 23 Ducati, or to a 24 Ducati, but we've seen with these rookies, and that's why the second year is hard to back up, you know, because now they have got the reference. And Acosta's gone back to last year's bike.
Mm.
It's what he knows, you know, but you always see this in motorsport, you know, with certain rookies that come, the talented ones, because they've got that blank canvas that you called it, you know, they can just, well, how'd you do that? Well, what are you talking about?
There's no difference.
So that I'm saying that's why I think that the Aprilia thing's been miscued a bit, because we're seeing Aguirre in those early races. He was running fifth or sixth there.
Fourth.
He got the fourth there at the sprint in Thailand. You know, so of course you're going, what's Martin going to do? Straight away you're thinking, you know. So the basis of my debate with you about the Aprilia is that these Yamaha and Hondas are coming on now.
I agree.
Yeah, they're coming on because they've got the resources and they've got the right planning. It seems to me they've got a project that's got a purpose and they're going the right. We're seeing the fruits of it now. But to me, the Aprilia,
they've signed
this big name guy, the world champion, and an unbelievable talented rider. Sure, but if you're hanging your hat on him.
They need a leader to help develop that bike, and that was going to be him. It wasn't going to be Marco.
This is also the manufacturer with the least sponsorship.
Yeah, okay? Which is weird, right?
But this, and again, to me, that just adds to the struggle.
We've spoken about this, Tom and I. I don't get how they don't have a major sponsor. They got Castrol as like they're one of their biggest sponsors, isn't it?
Maybe we'll talk to these people, get them sponsored.
Get the tire sniffing stuff.
Oh, it's good stuff.
It is good stuff. I know, yeah. Actually, keeps me going through the pod, to be honest.
Yeah. I bought it in for a reason.
That would have helped you when you were sick.
Yeah.
Shout out to Thailand's eucalyptus sniff cock, whatever it's called. It's got a weird cock thing
on the front of it. It serves its purpose.
It serves its purpose. That's the thing of Aprilia, is they have gone backwards, but they wanted Jorge Martin to lead that charge and through unfortunate circumstances.
Yeah, terrible.
But they don't have... Shocking. But they don't have that fall guy. Marco Bezzecchi isn't that fall guy. If you were Repsol Honda back in the day and Marquez crashed, at least you could lean on Danny Pedrosa, right? Or Marquez now crashed, now you could lean on Pecco Bagnaia. They just don't have that. And now they've gone so backwards where you can see Honda's got a clear plan. You look at Honda, okay, Juan Mir's crashed heaps of times. I said this last week though. Juan Mir's crashing out of sixth. He's not crashing out of 16th now. So it's different. They've got something there. Marini's had top 10s. I don't think he's doing amazing, but he's doing a whole lot better.
Zarco's a big
and surprise. Zarco's being the biggest one, for sure. You
know, he was bridesmaid for his whole career until he won Phillip Island 2 years ago. To see him move there and do what he's doing, I think it's amazing.
Amazing. So
you know, he's put his head down.
Yep.
You know, and he's obviously getting results, feedback, and it's showing.
Getting results, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel for Honda. There's 100 from where they were this time last year to where they are now is light years ahead already.
It's crazy.
And that's what just shows you how big concessions are. Yamaha, up until Jerez, almost seemed like they took a step backwards. It's only until Jerez.
They were promising at testing. Then they got to the first two races out of nowhere.
Yep.
This Yamaha went backwards.
The only shining light was Jack Miller.
Yes. Yes, and that was that.
For a couple. Thailand, Qatar, he did well.
Yeah,
and
it was another race.
Yeah.
He came fifth, I think.
Yeah, along those lines. So he's had a couple good races on that Aprilia anyway. So
Argentina.
The Yamaha.
It was Argentina, I think, he got a result.
Yeah. Yeah, so they've still been pretty disappointing up until Jerez. But they've been better, but they haven't exploded like we thought they would.
Yeah, but then as you know... The Honda's what, fifth or sixth, depending, right? If Marquez is on that bike, is it getting a podium?
Yeah. I know. That's crazy. Again. Yeah, it's crazy.
So you say, well, how close do you need to get? You know, like, yeah. I'm not saying about him going back there, but this is where that last step is just that.
Well, they say, you know, you can get to a second of a MotoGP, if you're a very good rider, you can get to like a second or a second half of a MotoGP rider. It's getting. Making up, it's so hard to make that extra 10th. That's where they make the money. And that's where Marquez is so good because it always seems like he's got
in his
back pocket, doesn't
he? He's ready on standby.
You know, so, but going back to it, you know, so Honda's catching up, I wouldn't say rapidly, but they're moving quick. But then to get to that next level, you know, that's where Ryder's going to make a difference. I don't know if Mir's going to be that guy. My prediction is, and I've said this on record, is Marquez is going to win this year. He's going to win next year in the Ducati. And Honda's going to sign him for an unholy amount of money.
Which is what they offered him anyway.
Then bring them back to the promised land. Because he's always said his allegiance is with Honda. He would love to go back to Honda. That's what I would see happen. If they get the new regs right. There's a whole lot of big ifs.
I'm with you there. I thought the same. I've changed my mind a little bit. I think he'll start the new regs on the Ducati, okay, and see how Honda is there.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually.
And because at the end of the day, I think he said he wants to go 5 more years. I read that recently. So what, he's just turned 31, I think. So he's good for mid-30s or so he thinks, even if it's 4 more years. So I do 100%. I think he'll finish his career back
on
the HRC. I think he's...
Do you reckon Repsol will come back for him?
Well, you'd be silly not to.
I don't know.
Write your own check there. I mean, come on. This is the most marketable person.
Yeah, for sure. It'd just be amazing, wouldn't it?
I'm curious to see if Red Bull kick Monster off this year because their contract's up at...
I reckon they will. I reckon they'll throw a disgusting amount of money at it.
Yeah, pretty obscene.
Dovi used to run Red Bull on his helmet back in the day. That's because Monster wasn't on the bike.
Yeah, but they've just come on stronger now. Monster started off small, then now it's the bike, then it's the leathers.
Yeah.
You know, but...
I think they will. Yeah, Red Bull's huge, man. Like, Monster's huge, but Red Bull's just another animal.
And they're getting good... You know, and that's sad because Martin's Red Bull. So they've lost them some exposure there because he's not on the grid. But they're getting made up now with Alex because Alex has been getting podiums and wins. So they've still got... I thought it was almost a bit of a sign. I thought, I wouldn't be surprised if he wins this weekend. I'm talking about Jerez. When Alex rocked up in that Volkswagen in the... Did you see the combi van?
Yeah. That Red Bull thing was cool.
That looked smick. That was just, you know, the Red Bull colours with the nice shiny blue.
That's very cool.
But look, so Yamaha. I mean, what a mate. We haven't spoken about this, but That pole lap from Quartararo.
Amazing. One of the best laps I've ever seen.
The forgotten man, you know. Yeah. I mean, I remember talking to him 2 years ago, like, he might as well retire. I'm like, he's only 23. What are you talking about? But it just seems like his boat was going to be missed forever and he was never going to get another chance. But, you know, they'll probably struggle with the stop-start tracks now coming up. But, you know, we all just thought he'd fade in the race. You know, but
I can't believe he didn't.
Yeah, we're waiting for it to happen.
Yeah,
waiting for it to happen.
I thought Pecco, he was a lamb to the slaughter.
100%.
I really did. But
Pecco will get him.
Yeah,
you know,
that pole lap was incredible. One of the best laps you're ever gonna watch, and it's so good to see. It's a great story
for a guy that's, you know, when you think how much he'd been overriding that bike. I remember 2 years ago at Qatar, he couldn't even get to Q1, and we're like, it was the first race of the year. And we're like, what's he doing? Why is he signing this contract?
Starting on the last row of some races. Crazy. Yeah. On a factory Yamaha.
And this, this is why we love motorsport, James, you know, because it's these stories, you know. 2 years ago, McLaren coming last in Miami. Now they've got 2 1-2s in the sprints and the main race. Yeah. So, you know, and Quartararo and the Yamaha. Like, and the thing I took from the pole, that qualifying, is that, like, yeah, Marquez did this incredible lap to get the pole, and then the second run he got the yellow flag and he said, no, I'm just going to back off because he's trying to ride conservative. But it was how close I think Fabio had 3 goes at it, and the first one was just missed out, the second one just missed out, and then the third one he got it. And that's what you want to see. The theatre of qualifying is always his, be it F1 or MotoGP. You want to see the guy who's crossed the line last go around and take that pole.
Yeah.
It's all about that theatre, that whatever the time is to beat does get beat by the second last guy, the last guy that gets across. Yeah. That's the ultimate theatre of motorsport for the qualies,
both
F1 and MotoGP. And to see him, I'm like, oh, he's almost there. And I'm close, like, nah, now. Close. I mean, I want to mark
and
together.
And he crashed.
Yeah. I want to, but I'm broken with this guy now. It was just the energy of watching the TV, or like you're just getting drawn into your television, like, look at this. This is a guy that was every bit as good. And you forget how good he was.
Yeah. And again, as you said, override. Yamaha shouldn't be doing what it was doing, but he did it. Hey, how do you see Le Mans? What's going to happen
there? Well, you know, if you look at last year, it was quite interesting, the three of them battling away there. This is Martin, Pecco and Mark. But if I remember correctly, Pecco had a rough start to the weekend. I think he crashed on the Friday, so he wasn't able to build from the sprint, and that's why he didn't quite nail it in the race. And he said as much post-race, but I thought it was interesting how, I'm going back to last year, you know, Pecco and Martin were dicing there. Mark was coming up, and Martin goes, I need to pass him now, otherwise Mark's going to get us both, you know. And then we saw, we saw Mark there again on a year-old bike, mixing it with those two guys at that track. So,
and a big difference in those bikes. A 23 to 24 is a lot different to a 24 to a 25, so, I'd say.
I mean, look, all these races point to Mark, even these bogey tracks, you know. Yeah. I say he's winning them until something else happens. And whether it's him crashing or Pecco pulling his finger out.
Is it going to rain again? France always rains.
I hope it does. It makes it. I like the wet. I like the wet stuff. It mixes it up.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. Look, I know he's crashed twice, and I'm not saying it because I'm a Marquez fan, but what we've seen, and I've read stories, mate, he's still learning this bike. He's still not on top of this bike, that some people are saying. Like, he's still, you know, and I don't know. Look, we're just very lucky to be living in a time where this has never happened before, where someone has been injured to this extent and missed 4 years of racing and come back and still been dominant.
It's
never happened in any sport. I don't know about you, maybe you can recall something where a guy has come back and still been at the very top.
Straight away, just about.
Well, of course, straight away. Yeah. So, yeah. But, I mean, look, we want a championship. We want to see, I'm saying as a Marquez fan, I want to see the old Pecco. I want to see that Pecco that we know. You know, I want to see him get on top of this bike. I'm not quite there. I'm not feeling it. Because that's what we're hearing. The sound bites we're hearing from Pecco is, I'm still not feeling the front. I'm still not quite feeling it. I'm getting there.
And yeah, it sounds sometimes even sounds a bit giving into, like, just saying things you probably shouldn't say to the media, like, oh, I was going to do exactly what Mark was going to do when Mark ran off the grid. Whatever. I know Mark, he almost.
Yeah, but that's a unique circumstance.
I know, but you shouldn't say that.
Marquez that day at Austin was the conductor. He knew exactly what he was doing to suck everybody in.
But you shouldn't say that. I'm just saying, for the psychology of going to war.
You are right. It's almost fanboy. Yeah. Like.
So that's just, that was just a weird, it was, as soon as I heard it, I'm like, that's a weird, and a couple of press things have come out and people have talked about it. It's just a weird thing to say. And he's said a couple of other things and maybe that's just how he is. And it's a water off a duck's back to him. It doesn't matter anyway. But if I was Mark here and that's like, yeah, I know, like I've got everyone covered. I'm sure he thinks that anyway, but it's just a weird thing to say.
And just one last thing, like they had the test, right? It didn't even try the new 12-liter tank. Right, he just tried a couple of parts that he took off the bike in the Burium test that Mark has had on the bike to put those things on. So there was no real clear plan for Pekka at the test either. You know, everyone thought he'd rock up on the Monday and they'd put the new 12-liter tank because this whole sprinting is going on with his whole the tank position. And look, this is another thing. This is going to be a factor this year, right? You know, it seems Mark is unstoppable on Saturdays. This is how it's very much looking. You know, he's won all the sprints.
Yeah.
All right, is that right?
Won all the sprints and almost all the
qualifiers. Just on the Saturday alone, right? So the fact that he's and Pekka sometimes struggling in the sprints, you know, this is going to add to the pressure on the Sunday.
That's why Jorge Martin won the title.
Yeah,
sprint races. To be honest.
Well, and then I've got obviously Pekka crashing a lot. Now one thing we haven't talked about is KTM.
Yeah.
So just look, your mate Mav there, right? We've got to give him credit there.
100% going to give him credit.
That ride he put on in Jerez.
And guitar.
But where are they at, though, as a whole? Because it looks like Acosta's just...
Four different bikes they got running.
Yeah, four different bikes.
I don't know. I'm still not buying into the hype. Remember
when me neither.
Remember when everyone thought I was crazy buying into the hype after of Vinales Austin? Everyone was on his back. Everyone was on his back.
Well, I got sucked in.
Yeah, this is where fraud started. And that was ground zero of fraud. It's like Wuhan. But... he's backed it up again, and it's great. He couldn't get onto the tail of Bagnaia. I don't know what he's doing, and it's such a Maverick Vinales thing of what's happening. Yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me if just everyone falls off again. A KTM is in. Okay, we talked about Ducati just before with Dallinger, right? He's made the most rideable bike. A rookie can get on there. You've got Morbidelli, who's as fast as my grandma on that bike, and they make it work. KTM. Have four, let's say, superstars, four very experienced riders or very, very, very talented riders on four different bikes.
It's crazy.
That's
all painted the same. They might as well be...
That doesn't give me any confidence because you're the complete 100%. Opposite of Ducati. So the wheels are going to fall off. And I'm telling you right now, and I don't want that to happen, but the wheels are going to fall off. And whatever Maverick Vinales is doing, kudos, but... Acosta can't do it. Bastianini can't do it. And Binder, like, okay, and you know what?
They got Binder track. Jerez is a Binder track. And he came, what, six or something?
Yeah, they got top tens.
Two of them, those two.
Yeah, all four, I think, got a top 10. I think Bastianini snuck
in. The only one, okay.
A lot of it's to do with crashing, but they are there. It's just they're not there either. They're not there at all.
Look,
and I can see that. And, like, we're going to get into Europe... And I just think they're going to fall away. And I could be so wrong, but they just don't look threatening at all. It's just kind of, they're just staying on the bike and racking up some points, but they're not. And they should all be top 10s, especially the Red Bull KTMs.
I think the whole thing is feeding your doubt, and rightly so, is that you're like, well, hang on a minute. We've got these four bikes. We've got this superstar talent.
Yeah.
Right?
Who wants out, clearly wants out.
We've got this superstar talent, and he's getting beat by fraud. Okay, because that doesn't add up.
Yeah.
This is why you're saying what you're saying. I totally agree with what you're saying, but you're saying, well, hang on, how can Vinales come fourth and then almost win the week before in Qatar with the type, regardless of the type?
Regardless, pressure, right? Yeah, it's not count that.
So that doesn't fit.
No,
right? This is like I'm having a dream here. I'm going to wake up because here's this guy who's, you know. You know, he didn't get close to Pecco, but this is in the Jerez I'm talking about. But he was there in a good solid fourth, didn't fade.
No.
And the guy we're all waiting to bust the Ducati door wide open is Acosta on the KTM.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to be on struggle street. So this is why this whole the whole thing's a big fraud. Like,
it doesn't make any sense.
There's no belief. What are you trying to sell me?
Yeah. There's like a timeshare.
Yeah, what are you trying to sell me?
I don't believe it. And if you've got four very different bikes, I don't believe it in it at all. Like, it's just... it just, something's going to happen. And look, maybe I'm going to be completely wrong, and but I just don't. I have zero confidence in KDM. Yeah, Vinales. Acosta is clearly not happy. You've got Honda trying to approach him, or they are approaching him and throwing him a ton of money. And I see Honda paying him out of that contract and going there.
I don't look. I when that story broke, I believed it, but now I'm less so. I'm more less so. I think he has. He'll be at the KTM next year.
Mm.
Okay. That's how I see it. I mean, because, mate, if they let him go, regardless of how much the buyout clause is, I heard it's $5 million, by the way. It's $5 million to buy him out of this contract. Mm. Right? Honda's got the money, clearly. But if they're naive, not the word, but, mate, he's the one that's going to take him to the promised land. And if they're going to sit there at the end of this year and go, well, yeah, we'll let him go, well, that might as well shut the doors. Well, maybe that's 2-1. Maybe that's actually happening. So that's probably why that might happen. But I just can't see a grid where there's a KTM and Acosta's not on it and they think they're going to get better.
Okay? Yeah. But
That's my tip. You know, look, we just want Acosta on a good bike. Mm. This is what we, as fans, that's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
He's wasting himself there. He had the Cinderella rookie year, got a couple of podiums back into the year and showed some amazing rides there last year. But to see him floundering around in 13 and like being so lost on that bike, and then what Vinales turns up and does what he's doing.
Doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense.
It's a timeshare. I'm not buying it.
All right, Danby, we're going through our hot takes.
Yep.
Let's get it going, mate. Thank you to everyone that messaged in. There's, as always, a lot to cover. At Matt Stevens, our boy. Lewis Hamilton will retire at the end of his contract. He just doesn't seem to be gelling with the Ferrari team.
Yeah, well, it's, you know,
we spoke about
that. Continues like it is.
Yeah.
But the rules change next year. And if he struggles next year's car, we'll see you later.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's on this Ollie Bearman kid who's their junior. You know, he's doing pretty good this year. You know, surprisingly. Yeah.
Haas has been good.
Yeah.
At Andrew.edza, Max's aggressive moves make for shit racing. Every battle should be fought properly.
He needs to go watch something else.
Okay. I picked that one just for you. Yeah. Nah, we need good racing, big dog Andy.
Go with sheep shearing. Yeah, please.
This guy will agree with you. MW93, Pulia need a faster test rider or more riders. All other brands have multiple test riders. So they need like a race proven, like a...
Well, I'll put this out there, James. How stupid is it? How is it to let Espargaro go?
I know. It doesn't make sense.
You know, like,
it's like Honda letting Danny Pedrosa go.
Well, there's another one.
Yeah.
That's even worse.
Yeah, that is worse.
That is worse.
But they should... And Espargaro... Maybe he just wanted to change. Who knows?
Yeah, like, but still.
But you give him some money, you know, like, and he already knows the bike inside and out.
You know, they're good mates. I know we're off track here, but, you know,
yeah,
Espargaro and Martin are great mates.
Best mates, almost, so yeah.
This, I'm just saying to you, there's something wrong at their Aprilia management level. Something is not...
Yeah.
1 and 1 equals 3 there.
Great and cool.
Okay? Because...
Great call.
That made perfect sense. That's his mate. Come, take my seat.
Get the world champion, you know, on that bike.
Mate, here's your mate. Here's whatever. You're staying here because you're going to tell him.
Yeah.
And speak, you're going to have these debriefs together. Mm. Now, we saw this, just to divert a little bit. We saw this back in the day when your mate Cheeseburger went to Ducati and he got off the bike at Jerez and there was Stoner in the garage.
Yeah.
Listen, mate, giving him some feedback and trying to help him out. Didn't work at the start, but the point was they had someone there he could relate to and talk to because it was from the same generation, you know. Yeah. So the Aprilia thing. So
and Ducati didn't listen to Casey.
Well, they didn't listen to a lot of people. Didn't listen to Lorenzo at the tank either.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a doc on that.
Yeah. So, Italians, mate. Italians. Look at Ferrari, I'm telling you. @Hart_Melbourne. Do we still believe Marc Marquez would have won the world championship on a 24 Ducati last year?
100%.
Yeah.
Do you not believe that?
No, I believe that. Huh. I believe that. @Hart_Melbourne again, our boy. The F1 World Championship would be dead without Max Verstappen. There's no excitement without him, whether it's good or bad.
He's
got a bit of a Marquez effect where the drama draws to him.
Oh, look, he's the villain.
Yeah.
You know, he's been painted as a villain from the minute he came in. So, but, you know, you forget, like, I don't know how long that column is watching, but there was a period there where he was... because he came in during the Mercedes dominance, and it was just at the back, as in it was the two Mercedes. He'd get the podiums here and then and win a couple of races. It wasn't at the back, but he was in the background, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So it wasn't. Yeah, Formula One, there's always something going on, you know. I mean, look
at
this
year.
But
at the moment, he's
a but look at this year, right? I think he's going to drop out of this championship, right? Because with the car, you cannot finish 24 seconds behind McLaren today. Mm. And there's this wing flex coming up that Tom talks about. And Tom's right to a degree, but they're still going to flex. It's not they're going to not flex. They're just adjusting a little bit. Now, McLaren might lose 5 seconds on today's performance, but it needs to be 25 seconds.
So
I'm saying that if Max drops out of this championship and becomes just an also ran, like, and then the juice is going to be between the two McLaren guys.
Yeah.
So there's always something.
It's all right to sniff that. There's always something for sure.
You know, so I know Max has been the star for lots of reasons, but is he the be all end all of it? No, I don't think so.
Number one ticket holder, it's Cold Papa. Williams is doing great, and if they found some valuable upgrades after Spain, it's on with Ferrari. Well, they just have already. It's a tricky one, but they're punching above their weight at the moment.
Look, they are. I think that's a big call. I'd love to see it, but if anything, Ferrari's probably got more solutions coming to challenge the Mercedes.
Yeah, correct.
So it seems the Mercedes on its day. Yeah, Russell had a bad weekend, but still got a podium, you know, thanks to the safety car VSC today. But, you know, the Mercedes seems to be able to maybe nip at the McLaren sometimes, because we've seen front rows from Russell. Kimi got the pole and sprint pole. The Ferrari seems to be performing below their par.
Yeah, definitely.
But if they get it sorted, they can probably challenge Mercedes as opposed to Williams trying to jump them. That's a big call. I mean, look, I like the call, but it's a big call.
Yeah. That's but all we got.
I still can't believe that both cars are now permanent Q3 cars.
It's amazing.
What a turnaround.
It's awesome. It's great to see. At JDE27, so probably more for me, will Jacob Rulestone be a contender for a podium or two this year, and will Joel Kelso go to Moto2 in 26? I goddamn hope Joel Kelso goes to Moto2 in 26. If he keeps on doing what he's doing, I don't know if you've been watching Danby, but he's... like consistent podiums now, fast, real fast. Raider just jumped everyone. It was an amazing race in Jerez. And then Rulestone, look, I think so. Probably at the end of this year, like he was always the front of that second pack last year in his rookie year. And then he's come off a neck injury from I think motocross. And he's, you know, already come in pretty quick and almost had a top 10 or a top 12 or something in Jerez. So he's going to have to build back into this championship. He's only 2-3 rounds in now. So he needs... he needs time back on that bike, and he's only in his second year. But he's doing awesome. They're both doing awesome, and it's great to see. And then young Carter Thompson won the Red Bull Rookies Cup as well.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
Aussies
that was a good
result.
That was a great result.
Aussies are coming through. At Lukey Kappa, I think MotoGP should implement a rule where you drop your worst round or two for the year.
Formula One used to have this system.
Shit house. Yeah. Don't like it.
No good.
Did F1 have that?
Yeah, they had it in the 80s. So you had 16 races.
Yeah.
And you only counted your best 11 results.
Yeah.
You only counted your best 11 results. So, but back then the cars were less reliable. So you just expected, you'd watch races and you wouldn't be shocked if, you know, you follow McLaren, oh, it blew up, are you? Yeah, and that just came under that banner of one of five DNFs you can have in the year. So they eventually, you know, got rid of it. But there was a couple of championships where Prost twice had more points. The most points at the end of the year. But because they only count the best 11 results, was not the champion.
It's dumb. Dumb.
I look back now, it is. I mean, it's hard to explain to people now, but that happened to him twice, where he had the most points.
Who won the title that year?
Lauda won it in 84 and then Senna won in 88.
Gotcha.
But both years, Prost had more points, the most. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Because, again, they counted the best 11 results. So you could drop your worst results. Yeah. So if you came fifth or an eighth, you could just discard that and just count the, you know. So I suppose we rewarded consistency to some degree.
Yeah, but points is points. What's the point if you don't? What's the point of the point system?
If you want to, anyone wants to jump on Google, look at the record books of the 1980s in Formula One, and see points, and it'll have in brackets. It'll have what they had and what they ended up with.
Funny.
What was discarded.
Funny.
But no good. No good.
Danby, thanks for coming on, mate. All good. Really appreciate it. Thanks for filling in. Big shoes to fill in for T-Shavs.
Yeah. That soy sauce in my hair.
Yeah. Good to see you. And we'll chat after Le Mans, definitely. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening, guys. Bye. See you next week.